At this time, we're going to bring you another edition of the Better Health Radio Show. We were on hiatus for a couple of weeks, but we are back with you. And on this occasion, I want to introduce you to, she's not a stranger to us here. She's been on the Better Health Radio Show before, but she's going to take the reins for a few shows. And I'll let her introduce herself to you. But before I do that, let me make a big welcome to Dr. Adana Grandison. I believe she's the first vice president of the Barbados Association of Medical Practitioners. So with that, let me say a very special welcome to Dr. Grandison. Dr. Grandison?
Good evening, Gregson, and good evening to all of our listeners across Barbados. Thank you for having me on the show this evening, and by extension, having BAMP as part of the Better Health Radio Show effort in terms of providing that medical education that's much needed to persons within Barbados. I just wanted to say, I know we have been on hiatus. Dr. Renee Boyce has done a fantastic job at really providing that medical education out there, and she's handed over the baton as part of, I guess we can call it, a relay, which we all need at some point in time. So I just want to give my very first shout out and show of respect to Dr. Renee Boyce for having such a lovely show and providing the wider Barbadian public with medical education that's much needed.
Let's hope she's having a good evening, Dr. Boyce. Carry on, Dr. Grandison.
So just to tell you a little bit about myself, I am a general practitioner here on the island, and I also am the first vice president, as you would have stated, for the Barbados Association of Medical Practitioners, and that's in the capacity that I will be speaking this evening, certainly as the hostess for the show. And I thought that it would be absolutely fitting to start our show off with one of the possible most significant complications or long-term sequelae, that we can call it, of COVID, which is something quite topical, not just here in Barbados, but certainly internationally. And so our very first session this evening, we are going to talk about long COVID, or what some persons may know as long haul COVID, post-acute sequelae of COVID, post-acute sequelae of SARS-CoV-2. There's so many different names out there, and just like with the multiple names that this complication essentially has, there are also many faces of this complication. And so I thought it would be good to really educate the Barbadian public about this presentation, and I thought it would be fitting to start off our very first presentation this evening with Dr. Linda Williams, who's the president of BAMP. And so I just wanted to take this opportunity to introduce Dr. Williams. She's also no stranger to the Barbadian public. Good evening, Dr. Williams.
Dr. Grandison. It's wonderful to be here and to have the BAMP Better Health radio program on air, educating the Barbadian public. I'm very excited about that.
Lovely. So even before we start this show, I just wanted to give you a bit of background about Dr. Williams. Dr. Williams is also a general practitioner, but she holds a master's in epidemiology from the London School of Hygiene and Tropical Medicine. She previously was a clinical director for the Barbados National Cancer Study. She also worked with the Chronic Disease Research Center, affiliated with UE, also now known as the CDRC center that we actually have. And she was responsible for establishing the Barbados National Registry for Chronic Non-Communicable Diseases. She's also an associate lecturer in the Masters of Public Health program at the University of West Indies. And she has special interest in palliative care, diabetes, cancer, and rheumatic diseases. Good evening and welcome, Dr. Williams. Thank you so much for coming out. I know that your schedule is usually quite busy, and I know that you also have a very significant and important passion and drive, really, to assist wider education on medical information. And I thought it was important to get you started on the show this evening. But I just wanted to let our listeners know that there are two numbers that you can reach us this evening if you want to call into the studio during the call-in session at any point in time. That first number is 434-1790. Or for those of you who may be a little bit more shy, you can contact us via WhatsApp at 266-4862. That number again is 266-486-24 WhatsApp and 434-1790 if you want to call into the studio. So Dr. Williams, I just wanted to start off by first explaining what is long COVID. Really, what is this?
Okay, so most of us, or many of us in Barbados, in this part of the world, would have had many viral illnesses over the course of our lifetime. Take, for example, many of us would have had dengue, and some of us would have had chikungunya, and almost all of us at some point would have had the flu, influenza. And we know that when you get these viral illnesses, usually afterwards there's a period where you have some post-viral effects. The dengue, you can have, you know, the fatigue and so on long after. In chikungunya, we saw many other things after, including people being diagnosed with new autoimmune conditions such as rheumatoid arthritis, etc. But even with the flu, many years ago, it is well known that there are many neurological symptoms that can follow the flu. What has been called neurasthenia, neuralgias, all kinds of post-viral neurological conditions have followed just basic influenza. And so for COVID-19, this was not unexpected that you would have a post-viral syndrome also. But the actual definition of this post-viral syndrome has been, let's just say they're working on it towards consensus. So for right now, the name of it, even as you suggested in your introduction, is not quite static. So we've heard long COVID. We've heard post-acute sequelae of COVID, which is called PASC or PASC. This post-COVID condition, chronic COVID-19, or long haul COVID. So many people are referring to patients as long haulers of COVID, and you would have heard that too. But all of them are referring to the same thing, a post-viral syndrome following acute COVID-19, acute SARS-CoV-2 infection. So there's no real consensus but towards the name, but we're starting to move with those names that are most familiar, long COVID, long haul COVID, and PASC being the most commonly one. Now, when you get infected with SARS-CoV-2 and you have what we call acute COVID-19, that has the symptoms of which we are all aware, the cough, the fevers, the sometimes vomiting, diarrhea, sinus congestion, nasal congestion, you know, the initial phases. But that those symptoms can actually last for up to 4 weeks, particularly the coughing, the chest pain, and the shortness of breath, and so on. And we call that up to 4 weeks acute COVID-19. So anything that you have, the symptoms, if you're symptomatic for COVID, you can have them up to 4 weeks, and we're still calling that acute COVID-19.
Dr. Williams, I just want to pause. I just want to pause right here because I know a lot of persons usually say, or confuse rather, being infected and having symptom and being symptomatic. Well, they may think that, for instance, once you have symptoms, you're infectious. So I just want you to lend some clarity there as you continue to explain yourself.
Right. So you're when you're infected, you can be symptomatic or asymptomatic. If you're symptomatic, the symptoms persist a lot longer than the infection. So that is why you are cleared from isolation at 14, 10, and now 7 days. We're clearing you from isolation because you are no longer infectious. But that doesn't mean that you don't have symptoms. You can have a cough for quite some time afterwards, but not be infectious because the cough is not the sign that you are able to pass the disease on to other people. It is the amount of virus that is in the body that determines whether or not you can pass it on to other people. And that we know falls, you know, the amount of virus starts to fall from about 6 to 7 days, and that's why we let you out of isolation. So the symptoms persist. And if you have symptoms up to 4 weeks, we still call that the acute phase, so meaning that your symptoms are due to an immediate infection, and that can last up to 4 weeks after you have been diagnosed with COVID. But most experts will agree that after 4 weeks, between 4 to 12 weeks, they would call that ongoing symptomatic COVID. So even at 4 to 12 weeks, you're still, it's sort of like a chronic ongoing situation. But once you get past the 12-week stage and you're still having symptoms, and I'll talk about what these symptoms are in a little while, that is when we go into calling it long COVID, post-acute syndrome COVID, or long-haul COVID. So there are people who have been affected with COVID and who are still having symptoms which are related to having had this illness. You know, they're at a year, they're at 18 months. There are people in various different stages, but most of them are after 3 months after diagnosis. So that's the 12-week stage. So that's go ahead.
No, I just like the fact that you were able to really lend some clarity in terms of what long COVID or long haul COVID or post-acute sequelae of COVID, because there's so many different names, and we'll come on to see later on in the show that there's so many different faces of this illness. But is it only that patient which have symptoms that persist, or can these symptoms stop and then restart?
Right. So I was going to get to that. In order to answer that question, Dr. Anderson, we have to look at the actual the way that COVID evolves in itself within the person. Okay. So the way that COVID evolves in the course of the illness itself is that usually in your early infection between day 1 and 6. That's when, if you're going to be symptomatic, you're going to develop your cough, sometimes loss of taste and smell, diarrhea, sometimes dizziness, sometimes the shortness of breath, and so on. And that is the early acute phase, day 1 to 6. And then people who get more ill past day 6, then we believe that they're having what we call the host inflammatory stage. And between days 7 and 21, these people can become very ill. So these are people who then go on, and they may be hospitalized, okay? And they then go on to have more shortness of breath. You might have a chest x-ray that shows lung infiltration, okay? Meaning that you get lots of what we call patchy infiltrates in the lungs, which is meaning that your good lung tissue is being replaced by inflammation, okay? They can go on to have abnormalities of the liver, severe shortness of breath, and even brain inflammation and renal problems. So these people go on to be hospitalized in this host inflammatory stage. And in the very late host inflammatory stage, you can also get problems with clotting. You can get very, very small clots, what we call microclotting, in many organs. You can get heart inflammation, you can get a pulmonary embolus, which is a large clot in the lungs, and shock. People can go into what we call shock or multi-organ failure. So what we see, and what I want you to get out of what I'm saying here, is that most people will just have that early viral phase and will not go on to develop the inflammatory phase. But for those who do, they can become very, very ill in those inflammatory phases. So COVID, what we knew from the very beginning, is not a lung condition. It's a whole body condition. It can affect every organ of the body. And that's really very important to understand when we're going to talk now about what are the symptoms of this post-acute syndrome. Because it can affect every organ of the body, what we found very early is that the post-acute syndrome can also affect every organ of the body. And so there have been papers that talk about 50 different symptoms that are involved. And for the simplicity of this program, we're going to just call it long COVID, okay? So right. 50 different symptoms. And then there were papers that went on to find 103, and now 203 in the Lancet paper have been described. 203 different symptoms. How do you wrap your brain around a syndrome that has so many different features and faces and so many different presentations? Well, we're starting to draw it down and say, well, what is the commonest and the most the thing that overrides everything? What do these people present with most of all? And they found that you could categorize the symptoms into different groups as well, or related to the acute phases of illness.
And that is where really went to this conversation, Dr. Williams, because long COVID or post-acute sequelae of COVID, as we've come to find out that it is also called, has many faces. It is almost like the great imposter. You're never really sure based upon these many presentations that it is, for instance, just a simple muscle ache or just simple brain fog that we will come to hear about. And so I think it's really, really important for us to really get an understanding of first of all, what these symptoms look like. But I'm glad that you highlighted the fact that all of them stem from the fact that the inflammatory system, or the system that helps with fighting viruses and bacteria, and parasites and all of those essentially invaders of the body that can cause destabilization of the body, that is now overwhelmed and cannot return to its state of normalcy. And so can you now go through by system, because I think that that's probably the easiest way, and certainly in terms of the most common presentations that we tend to see, some of the many faces of long COVID, certainly the ones that cause the greatest impact, but then somewhere a lot of persons may possibly say, well, you know, it's probably just I'm getting older, or I don't know, it's probably the fact that this pandemic has caused a lot of stress to everyone, but they may not think that it could possibly be a long-term complication of an illness that they had, and they may not have been as severely ill as some person that may have gone to the hospital, because now we're starting to see that the research is showing that even those persons who do not have severe acute COVID can later on present with long COVID conditions. So talk to us about that.
Right. So I categorize them into different categories. And so the symptoms that are directly related, if you're ill, really ill from COVID, and you were hospitalized, and you were, whether you were in the ICU or not, you were ill enough to be hospitalized, okay, you could have resulting organ damage from the severe illness. So this is direct organ damage from the severe illness. And this is also reported in people who are in ICU for many other reasons as well. So you could get, you know, physical weakness, myalgias, you can get shortness of breath, you can get joint stiffness and pain, and mental and cognitive dysfunction, meaning I'm going to talk about that a little bit more. So in most people who've gone through severe illness, or who especially ICU survivors, they also have these organ damage directly related to severe illness. And you can get kidney and liver and so on dysfunction, and lung dysfunction, which is the direct result of having been impacted. But then you can have people who don't have that. They weren't hospitalized. They didn't have all of that, but they were still quite ill from COVID. And they have what we call the persistent viral symptoms. So the persistent viral symptoms are persistent cough, fatigue, sleep disturbance, decreased lung function, loss of smell can persist, loss of taste can persist. Anxiety and depression, of course, if you're going through all of these, it could cause anxiety and depression, but they believe that the COVID itself is directly causing anxiety and depression. I'll talk about the COVID effects on the brain in a little bit. But also chest pain, palpitations, shortness of breath, and the things that you experience in the initial phases of COVID can just persist on and on and on as well. So you can have people who were in hospital, severely impacted, having the direct impact, those symptoms continue. Then we can have people who weren't in hospital who have persistent viral syndrome. But there's another category of people, and these are the people who have dysregulated immune reaction and what we call dysregulated autonomic nervous system reaction. So long COVID or COVID is an immune disorder. That's one thing that we've learned about. It's an immune disorder. It can affect many, many organs. And when it upsets those organs, your body starts to think of its own organs as being the invader. So all of the inflammatory responses that were supposed to fight the COVID virus now start to fight your own organ system. Okay? And those people can present with palpitations, what is known as POTS, which is postural orthostatic orthostatic tachycardia syndrome, in which people feel dizziness, vertigo. When they stand up, they get dizzy and they get their fast heart rate and their blood pressure starts to fall. And all of that is because of the immune effects on what we call the autonomic nervous system, the ones that control things like balance and so forth, and blood pressure. And then you get the effects also on things like your nerves. So these autoimmune things can affect your nerves and can cause nerve pain. You can get temperature dysregulation. That's also an autonomic immune result. So people have gone on having fever for up to a year after COVID. They've just kept on having fever, dizziness, loss of balance. As I said, some people get hives and rash. Hives and rash being as a result of this autoimmune dysregulation, but anxiety also. So one of the things that is overall in all of these patients, whether they were in ICU, whether they have persistent viral syndrome, whether they have this regulation of the autoimmune system or autonomic system, all of these people have one thing that has persisted and that's in common, and these symptoms, the brain symptoms, seem to be in all groups. And these brain symptoms seem to be related to all groups of people, no matter what other symptoms they have. And that is chronic fatigue, what is known as brain fog. So lack of concentration, inability to even do some very simple tasks. Just to focus on doing simple tasks becomes extremely difficult. Okay? So brain fog and what is known as post-exertional malaise. So as soon as you try to do something, you feel so tired. It's like you ran a race and you can't find the energy to do anything else. So despite all of the other symptoms, the thing that unites all of the long COVID sufferers is this these overall effects on the brain. And they've been doing autopsies on people who've had severe COVID, and they found that people who have severe COVID have inflammation of the brain, and that it is an inflammatory condition that's going on in the brain that might be responsible for this brain fog. Now, what's interesting with these people who experience brain fog and fatigue and so on, sort of like what we call chronic fatigue syndrome, which is better now known as myalgia encephalitis, okay? But what we see with these neurologic symptoms is that these people have a very difficult time being able to get back to work, being able to function at the level that they were able to before. So despite all the other symptoms, this seems to be the greatest cause of disability in long COVID.
And I'm glad that you brought that up, Dr. Williams, because that's where I would like to take the conversation next. But just before we get into that component, just wanted to remind our listeners out there that you can call in if you wish at 434-1790. You can call directly into the studio if you want to ask Dr. Williams any questions, or you can send a message to 266-4862. Again, that's 266-4862.
Well, since you invited them, I think I see someone here trying to get your attention. So let's see if we can access them. Yes, very good evening.
Peace be unto each and everyone.
Yes, please. Go ahead. The doctors can hear you, please.
Good evening to your special people, people we have to depend on.
Yes, it's Dr. Grandison and Dr.
Williams. Dr. Grandison, welcome. I'm happy that we have the show back on, and I just want to welcome you and Dr.
Thank you very much.
Dr. Williams, I salute you. I salute you too, Dr. Grandison, but I really salute you. I salute you for your boldness, you know, your truth, especially when it comes to our COVID crisis. And I pray that God will continue to strengthen you all, especially you. I know that you have it. You have a tough job, and I pray that God will continue to strengthen you. And I'm glad for the Better Health Show again. So thank you. And the doctor that's in charge, you did a good thing by bringing Miss Williams today. But when you speak about cancer, you know, I don't like that word. Because right now I have a death in my family, one of my siblings, and that is what caused her death. My mom, one of my siblings. So when I hear the word, it really hurts. It really hurts. Anyhow, all the best to you all, and may God continue to strengthen you, grant your wisdom, and keep the good work up.
My condolences to you, and thank you for your well wishes, and I wish you strength as you go through this difficult time.
Yeah. Yes, I always ask people to draw strength, and I know that my strength is from the Word of God. So that is what I'm trying to do. But, you know, I still have feelings because Jesus wept, and he was better than me. So who am I? All right, God bless. Stay safe.
Thank you, Gail.
All right, you too.
All right, Gail, have a good evening, and thanks for your call. While I'm at it, Dr. Grandison, let me just offer another greeting to you via the WhatsApp. It says, I just want to say hello and welcome to Dr. Grandison and to Dr. Williams. And this other one says, here we go. Good evening. Question for you, Doc. Is numbness of the feet a symptom of long COVID? You're going to get used to this. Don't worry. Is numbness of the feet a symptom of long COVID?
Great question. Dr. Williams, you want to take that from here?
Well, it's really a great question because I too experienced that as a long COVID symptom. But one of the things that is very clear is that there are a wide variety of neurological symptoms. Remember I was talking just now, the thing that overrides, you know, no matter what other symptoms this person's had, the thing that seems to unite most of these long COVID sufferers are these neurological symptoms. The brain fog, the fatigue, post-exertional, malaise, but also other neurological things. So you can
Dr.
get numbness,
when you
people get disturbances of feeling. So what we call paresthesia, whether pins and needles, or some man described it as bubbles moving through his skin that he's been feeling for over a year. Sorry.
Dr. Williams, when you say neurological symptoms, exactly what do you mean? Good.
Yeah, so affecting the nerves, affecting the nervous system. So, yes, you have to pull me back from the medical jargon.
Don't worry, we all do it.
Right. So affecting the nerves, whether the nerves in the brain or the periphery. So that is what is very prominent in long COVID. Now, we also think that it affects not only the nerves, but also the smallest blood vessels, what we call the microcirculation. So another reason for the effects of long COVID is that you can get vascular damage. So you can have blood vessels being damaged by inflammation or by small clots in these blood vessels. And that can also affect the nerves because the smallest blood vessels in the body also feed the nerves. So you can get what we call a peripheral neuropathy as a result of this vascular damage to the blood vessels supplying the nerves. So it could be direct damage or vascular damage. Now, the effects on the nervous system also include, as I mentioned, anxiety, depression, but also we're starting to see people with more what we call psychotic symptoms, so people who are losing touch with reality. So we have a lot more mental disorders, not only cognitive disorders, but mental disorders. And one of the things that that a lot of the doctors are worried about going forward is whether the effects of this inflammation on the brain, even in people who have had mild COVID, right,
yes,
who have the, that could this go on to lead into greater numbers of people with dementia? And that is what is one of the great concerns right now. Can it go on to a greater number of people with dementia?
All right.
Now, I know. Go ahead, Gregson.
Yeah, I beg your pardon, please. I thought she was finished. I have a call here on the line, and one was waiting as well. So I want to see if they're still there. Good evening.
Good evening.
Yes, they're still here, Doc.
Yes.
Good
what?
Evening. Hello. Good evening, caller.
Good
How
evening,
are you
doctors.
Doing?
Not too badly. Just one quick question. In all your years of medicine, do you know if there's any cure or remedy that can reverse gangrene?
And this is the go ahead, Linda.
I think it's not related directly to COVID, but let me just say, reverse it, meaning if gangrene has set in, can we give something that causes it to go away or to be reversed? I would have to answer that with a simple no.
No.
Reverse gangrene implies that you are able to supply blood supply to something that has already lost blood supply and started to die. So no, I've never encountered anything that you could take or do that would reverse it.
Very well. Thank you.
So caller, I think that's a good point that we can probably try to explain for you in a little bit of detail quite quickly. Certainly when the particular part of the body gets to the stage where gangrene has occurred, as Dr. Williams stated, the oxygen, the nutrients, everything that particular organ or body part needs in order to survive has been essentially been removed, been blocked off, either by lack of circulation getting to that body part or some other damage, okay, whether it's an external damage, whether, for instance, like frostbite, which doesn't happen here in Barbados. But once that occurs, nothing can essentially then reverse that from happening. So we want to really catch patients long before we get to the stage of gangrene. I thought that's actually where Dr. Williams is going with that part of the conversation, because we don't want patients coming in when they have the gangrene, when they start to get, for instance, in the legs, when they start to get the pain while they're walking. That's when we want the patients to come in. Sometimes that in itself is even too late. But that is another topic. I'm glad that you brought that up, because now that I know it's something of your interest, we will be sure to address that in another show.
Okay. Thank you, doctors.
You're welcome.
Thank you, sir. All right, Doc, you can carry on. I think I've cleared the board here, so you can carry on, please.
Okay. So what's the scope of the problem that we're talking about with this long COVID?
Yes.
Overall, right now, we think about 7% at 6 months have long COVID. 7% of all the people who've had COVID, think about the vast number that is worldwide, that's still more, that's millions of people. Okay. Now, of those who are hospitalized, it goes up. So above those who are hospitalized, about 20 to 30% of those persons who are hospitalized develop long COVID. And those who are in ICU who required intensive care, the number is even higher, it's about 37%. This is for the USA, okay? It's about 37% of the ICU cases. Now, the types of COVID the variants have also changed the picture. But also what has changed the picture is vaccination. So the variants with Delta, if you weren't hospitalized, 11% of people got long COVID, okay? But with Omicron, only about 4.5% of people got long COVID. But you have to bear in mind that Omicron is that much more infectious. So more people have gotten Omicron. Okay, so even though it's 4.5% of the Omicron sufferers, that's still as large a number.
A smaller percentage of a larger number. So it's still overall a larger number.
Exactly.
Right.
So currently in the U.S., the estimate is about 7 million people who currently have long COVID, but since the beginning of the pandemic, it's over 20 million people. So who have had long COVID, but at present about 7 million, right? We can only call it long COVID if we know you had COVID. So that's the other thing. If you're not tested and you're not, we don't know it's COVID, even if you have mild COVID and then you go on to develop symptoms later, we won't know it's long COVID because we didn't know you had COVID. Okay? So that's why we keep saying, if you're symptomatic, if you're saying, if what you're exposed, to go out and get tested, because even mild COVID can present as long COVID. So even if you have an acute syndrome right now, and you think, well, it's just my sinuses, it's just my thing, and whatever, and you know, even if that persists, we wouldn't be able to call it that, because we may not miss, we might miss the point where we're able to test it and call it COVID.
And I think that that's really, really important, Dr. Williams. That's a really good point that you just made, because quite often, you know, we're a bit hesitant to go out and get tested. But certainly, because some of these symptoms are so non-specific, in the bigger realm of medical conditions that you can have, a person feeling down and, you know, depressed and not wanting to communicate with persons, or having a loss of appetite, or not being able to sleep, outside of the realm of knowing that that person may have had a previous history of COVID, acute COVID, when we're talking about it now, we probably wouldn't be clued in as physicians to say, you know what, we really need to check to see, is this long COVID? Yes, there are certain things that your primary care physician or your general practitioner, or for instance, the doctors at the polyclinics across the island can provide you. But there are also times where we may need to have that intervention, because we need to provide further intervention, specialist intervention to the patient, because it's now within a very fine, well-defined area that a specialist would need to help that patient.
Yeah.
So Dr. Williams, I wanted you to really go into that a little bit, but also you were speaking before you had started to speak about the impact that long COVID can actually have on society as a whole when we look at Barbados as a collective. What is the overall impact that this can have on our society, especially given the fact that, as you know, we have heard for this is probably a good few years now, where we are not replacing the amount of deaths that we have annually in terms of our birth rate. And certainly we are having an older population, and this has implications. So tell us about the implications of, one, being able to identify this condition quite early, quite off the bat, and then certainly providing the intervention to potentially allow some of these persons to get back out into the workforce as quickly as possible.
So one of the things we've noticed in this pandemic, particularly in Western society, we have sort of pushed our individual rights to the fore over looking at society as a whole. Now, a lot of people get very upset when they hear me talk on the radio about, you know, getting vaccinated or mask wearing or so forth. But this conversation we're having about long COVID is part of the reason why we persist with that message of caution, because we're not just looking at the here and now. As doctors, we have to look at the here and now and the future for the country as a whole. If there's a greater burden of sickness, if there's a greater burden of disease that we then have to try to sort out, it impacts the entire healthcare system. It impacts the way that we are able to provide care for other illnesses, and it impacts the resources that we have to provide that care. So if there is a greater burden of long COVID, and also one of the things we know about COVID, and you could call this a part of long COVID too, is that the chronic diseases that were latent, the latent chronic diseases, so people with pre-diabetes are becoming diabetic, people with early hypertension are now becoming frank hypertensive. So you're getting this big burden, this impact of non-communicable diseases that are increasing, and all of those are taking up the same resources. So you've got the long COVID people, you've got the greater burden of non-communicable diseases, you've got the people who neglected their health during COVID who are now presenting with probably late stage cancers and all sorts of things because of lack of screening. And all of this is calling on the same health resources, the same pool, the same doctors, the same nurses, the same one hospital that we have. You understand? All of it is pooling on the same health resources. And as a country as a whole, this is a unsustainable impact on our ability to care for all these people, particularly in the healthcare system that we have, that is this social welfare system and health system that we have right now. So if we really strip off and try to do everything that all the other countries do without having the resources to be able to sustain it, that is when we will see the effects. Not necessarily immediately, but down the road, the effects are going to be, you know, with us for a long time. And one of the things that we have to bear in mind is that the risk factors for long COVID is having COVID. And that sounds so simple, but having COVID is a risk factor for long COVID. So if we want to prevent long COVID, we also have to try to reduce the burden of people who have COVID. Okay? Absolutely. And it's very clear, there's the studies that show in a dose-dependent way. In other words, the more vaccines you have, the less likely you are to have long COVID. So the unvaccinated are at greater risk for long COVID. And that may not sound nice to some people who they might get upset because they don't want to hear that, but it is a fact. Okay? So the greater risk that you have for severe illness, the greater risk you have for developing long COVID. The more symptoms you have at presentation, the more you are likely to get long COVID. But remember, as I said, even people with mild COVID can go on to get long COVID. Right. The older you are,
I beg your pardon.
The older you are, you're also more likely. Go ahead.
Yes. This WhatsApp here is saying, good evening. Recently, I have been reading about persons who have experienced severe headache as long COVID. In many instances, it's far worse than migraine. They get little or no relief from medication. They're just in pain day and night for over a year. Any comment?
Yes. That is one of the neurological effects. The headache, the neuralgias, the as I said, disturbances of sensation,
cognition.
Lots of people, and disturbances of cognition. So some people lost the ability to recognize even their family members, okay, or remember their names. But the headache has been disabling. Although it is one of the symptoms of long COVID, it is in the 203 symptoms as one of the things that can be disabling. The thing that causes the most disability, though, is the inability to get up and function as you normally would have, and just being chronically fatigued and not being able to go out and to function as you normally would have. So, yes, debilitating headaches have been associated with long COVID as well.
All right.
I was starting to talk about the people who are most at risk. So as I said, the unvaccinated.
Linda? Dr. Williams?
Older ones. Yes.
I would just like to pause here because I think Gregson, it appears as if Gregson has another caller. Yes, so go ahead, Gregson.
Yes, Dr. Williams. I'm sorry. I thought you were finished for a second. My apologies. Yeah. See if you can follow me on this one. This one says, good evening, doctors. Gregston, please ask the doc if a young person, 21 to be exact, had COVID with no known symptoms, this says systems, but I believe they mean symptoms, was isolated at home for 10 days, went back to work and school, but not feeling the need to study. How should that person be treated? Knowing this person was affected before without in-person interaction with lecturers and schoolmates, need some advice. If you want me to repeat again, I shall, but that one was a long one to follow. You get the gist of what they're saying?
I think I do, because that's something that quite often we as physicians we see. So I'm going to turn it over to Dr. Williams first, let her answer that question, and then I'm going to allow her to go back to one of those, the important risk factor, speaking about the link between vaccines and the prevention of long-term COVID in terms of keeping that inflammatory system calm and being able to return to normalcy after the acute illness.
All right.
Go ahead, Dr. Williams.
One other piece, Dr. Williams, before you move on, they say that they've now sent this part. By the way, this 21-year-old is vaccinated and boosted. So go, please.
Okay. So vaccination, what does it do? Vaccination does not prevent you from getting COVID. We've said it a thousand times. People are still need to hear that. Vaccination prevents severe illness from COVID. Okay? And vaccination is also known, because it's preventing the severity, vaccination is also known to prevent severe long COVID. Okay? But, as I said, one of the overriding symptoms in all people who have long COVID is concentration problems, attention problems, brain fog issues, lack of being able to focus on what they're doing. The possibility also, I don't know the young person, but the possibility also is that they need to be screened for anxiety and depression. Anxiety and depression in long COVID, particularly in younger people, has been seen over and over again. So they need to be screened for depression, which may not be the result of having been sick, but just the direct result of the COVID-19 infection itself. So they need to be screened for now anxiety and depression, poor concentration, what the brain fog and the malaise and so on and so forth. That young person should be taken to a general practitioner or family physician, and have them screen and examine to see if there's something else underlying. It may not just be that they don't want to study or they don't want to interact any longer. It may be something deeper than that.
And Dr. Williams, I think it's also important here to speak about, and I know you've been saying it for quite some time, the neurological impact that certainly COVID can have on the brain. But just so that our listeners understand it a bit clearer, once the body becomes ill, the inflammatory system has a duty to attempt to fight off whatever that external stimulus is or that virus is. Generally speaking, once we have that insult to the body, usually within a few weeks, the body will return to its normal state. It is thought, because it's only a hypothesis at this point in time, we have not been able to directly identify the pathway, as Dr. Williams would have stated, but it is thought that the body is unable to return to that state of normalcy. More and more research is actually showing that the virus is able to now directly enter and affect brain tissue, causing more inflammation in brain tissue. And with that, you can see persons having some of these symptoms, the headaches, the inability to concentrate, and certainly where they cannot focus and having symptoms of depression and or anxiety. And it is really nothing that any of us should be ashamed of. I am a very big advocate on mental health. Mental health, just like any other organic illness that we can see, touch, or we go to the doctor for to monitor, is something that we should become more in touch with. So I do agree with Dr. Williams that student and worker should take the opportunity to have a check-in. I know quite often when you're young, you think you're strong, but going to and seeing a doctor is not simply about checking in when you are unwell, but it also should be a pathway to ensuring that you stay well and you're at your optimal. So more so a wellness visit versus just checking for that illness. So I do agree with Dr. Williams on that one. And I'll allow Dr. Williams to continue at this point. Unless, Gregson, you have something else to offer.
This one is just inquiring if either of you or both of you, if you have a private practice.
Yes, we do both have private practices at this point in time. Yes, we do.
All right. Now, you can direct them to the telephone book if you're listed. You're not listed?
Yes.
Right. So
WhatsApp. But we are here. We are here on this show, not necessarily to promote.
Yeah, I get that. I get that. But
definitely to provide patients with the information that they need at this point.
Right. So without saying anything further, WhatsApper, you can look them up in the telephone directory and see where they're located, and then you can decide what you will do as your next course of action. All right. So that's the best they will do for you here. As she said, she's not here to promote their practice. But anyhow, carry on, Dr. Grandison.
Actually, I'll turn it over to Dr. Williams, because I think that Dr. Williams was actually going on to make an absolutely critical point. Because I think that last listener that wanted to speak about and made the point that she is not only vaccinated and boosted, I think she's no testament to the fact that the vaccine actually works, because she was vaccinated and boosted and she had no symptoms. She probably didn't even know, based upon the fact she didn't have any symptoms, that she had COVID, but did the smart thing, probably based upon an exposure, and took the test and realized that she was positive. So go ahead, Dr. Williams.
Right. So again, we have to say it over and over, and we will say it as long as we need to say it. The reason for the vaccination, the reason the vaccine was developed, was not prevent you from ever getting COVID. People who are vaccinated can still get COVID. What the vaccine does is alter the outcome. So what the vaccine does is alter the severity of COVID. And that is also seen with other types of vaccines. So the flu vaccine does the same thing. It doesn't stop you from getting the flu. It prevents you from getting pneumonia and from severe influenza. So there are different types of vaccine. They work in different ways. But the COVID-19 vaccine was developed to prevent severe illness and death from COVID-19. And so one of the consequences of preventing severe illness is also preventing long COVID, which is directly related to the severity with which you had COVID in the beginning, and also related to all the risk factors for getting severe COVID. So the things that we know that would lead you to getting severe COVID from the very beginning, as we said, unvaccinated, older age, people with a high body mass index, or so obesity is a risk factor also for long COVID, particularly if you're unvaccinated, but also underlying chronic conditions such as asthma and lung disease, COPD, chronic obstructive pulmonary disease, which you get from smoking, etc. Those underlying risk factors for severe COVID are also risk factors, of course, for long COVID. If you have a very big exposure to COVID and you become very ill, you have high titers at the beginning, that's also associated with long COVID. But what is unique to long COVID, so all the things that could cause severe illness in COVID, of course, are risk factors for long COVID. But what is unique to long COVID that people ended up with it was that people who have underlying autoimmune conditions, whether they know about them or not, so autoimmune diseases, lupus, rheumatoid arthritis, and there's a million, there are many, 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 many different types. Sjogren's and Boucher's and all these different types of autoimmune syndrome. If you have that already, then that was also a risk factor for developing long COVID. But here's one, female, just being a woman, more long COVID was seen in women. Throughout the world, that's
true. Yeah. Dr. Williams, I wanted, because we are starting now to come on to the approaching the end of our show. This time is starting to go at extremely quickly. Gregson, I don't even think you recognize that.
No, I didn't. I honestly did not.
But Dr. Williams, I wanted you to specifically speak about one of the illnesses that we know plagues Barbados significantly. One of the non-communicable diseases that we have here, and almost every single person on this island either is affected by it or knows someone who is affected by it. And I'm talking about diabetes, because quite often I would have heard that you alluded to it while we were speaking earlier about the fact that there are some persons who may have been pre-diabetic. And after they have contracted acute COVID, they went on to now develop overt diabetes. What is your advice for persons, certainly after they have contracted contracted COVID. They have cleared isolation. They're now back out in community, carrying on their everyday lives. Tell us a few points, if you could, in terms of what that person should do and what how they should go about in terms of their next possible visit to the doctor. Is there anything that they need to be looking out for?
Right. So what I find is that we really now have to get into a campaign of sensitizing Barbados about long COVID and what it is. And we also have to sensitize Barbadians on the types of symptoms that you should check for and go to your doctor. And as we said, on the ground here, we are seeing people who were pre-diabetic or who may not even have known they were pre-diabetic. They have a family history of diabetes, right, now presenting with diabetes, which usually presents with, increased frequency of passing water, increased thirst. You might be losing weight even though you're eating. You might have dryness of the skin, or you may have no symptoms at all. You might have increased hunger, but you may have no symptoms at all. Blurred vision, poor healing of wounds, all these are symptoms of diabetes, but as I keep saying, you may have no symptoms at all. And so the key thing in after long COVID is, if you're starting to experience, or after having COVID, is that if you're starting to experience whatever kind of symptoms, it may not matter, because I said there are 203 symptoms that they're now looking at as are related to COVID. If you've had COVID, it would be good to get a health checkup. It is good to get a health checkup because you need to know where you are. Okay? The most important thing is for us to evaluate people properly. If you haven't been to the doctor in a really long time, now is a good thing to go and see. You know, did this actually affect my body? Did it alter me in any way? Even if you've had mild COVID. All right? If you are sick, please go and get tested. Let's find out that it's COVID so that we can relate it to the having had COVID if you're presenting with symptoms. But also, you need to be evaluated for things that might explain it that are not COVID. So you can't just call everything long COVID after COVID. You might be presenting with some other illness. It might have been a more severe thing. It might have been something like cancer. Absolutely. It might have been something like a blood disorder. It might be something that you're now presenting with. We can only call it long COVID after we've ruled out that there's nothing else going on. So long COVID must be what we call a diagnosis of exclusion. After we worked you up and we've seen that, okay, there's no other explanation for the symptoms apart from the fact that you had COVID-19, then we can call it long COVID. You need to be worked up. And if you've had COVID and you were in hospital, particularly if you needed that care, then you might have to look at specific organ systems. You might have been referred to a lung function test or a heart test afterwards. Those are like the common sense things to do afterwards to see if there's if there was any direct organ damage. And we also need to screen people for anxiety and depression. So there are lots of reasons to come in and to have a general health check, particularly if you haven't had one in a long time. You've had COVID-19, post-COVID-19, come and get checked up by your doctor and make sure that everything is what it should be.
Well, thank you so much, Dr. Williams, for coming on to the show this evening to really open up the bat. And I thought that you did a really, really good job. I even saw that Gregson was there completely tuned in to the point where he started lost track of time, but that's okay. Many more of those to come, Gregson, as we continue the Better Health Show between myself and Dr. Lewis, which the Barbadian public will meet soon. Right. And to our listeners in Barbados, I want to say thank you. Have a wonderful Sunday evening. Continue to enjoy yourself. Be safe. If you're symptomatic, get tested. Know your status and certainly check in with your physician if you're having any symptoms that are not your baseline. Rexon, I turn it over to you.
Yes, thank you so much. That was the first in a new series of the Better Health radio show. Your host this evening was Dr. Dana Grandison, and her guest was Dr. Linda Williams. We should be around, God's willing, next weekend from 6 in the evening for another edition of the Better Health Radio Show. Ladies, thank you so kindly, and do have yourselves a wonderful evening. Dr. Grandison and Dr. Williams, take care. Thank you.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. Thank you.
Bye-bye.